Job chapter 40. In Job 39, or 38 and 39, God questioned Job about his knowledge, and God made it clear to Job that his knowledge about the physical world and the animal world was insufficient. It was very limited. And God then asked Job if he was able to instruct the Almighty. And obviously the answer to that was no. We see here in the first two verses of Job 40, he says, "Moreover, the Lord said unto Job, contendeth with the Almighty instruct him? He that reproveth God, let him answer it." So he's rebuking Job here, and Job then told God that he would keep silent. He would keep quiet. Verse 3, "Then Job answered the Lord and said, Behold, I am vile, and what shall I answer thee? I will lay my hand upon my mouth. Once I have spoken, but I will not answer. Yea, twice, but I will proceed no further." So basically, Job just says, "All right, God, I give up. I'll be quiet." But he hadn't quit. He hadn't surrendered. He hadn't yielded himself to God. And so God knew that, and God's going to continue to probe Job and get him to understand not only did Job lack wisdom and knowledge, but Job also lacked power. He lacked the ability that God had. And God was going to show him that. And so God's going to ask Job questions and illustrations in these last, these next two chapters, 40 and 41, that Job couldn't answer, about the mighty beasts that God created. And as God begins, he starts out here asking Job some basic questions to get him to stop and think and to really probe his heart. And we see here, first of all, that God challenged Job's power himself. In verse number 6, "Then answered the Lord unto Job out of the whirlwind." Now once again here, God's talking to him out of this whirlwind. And that must have been amazing. I still can't quite fathom that in my mind. To have this noisy whirlwind is rolling around outside, right around Job, and Job hears God speaking to him out of this whirlwind. And that must have been a fearful thing in and of itself. And God's speaking to Job now, and he's asking him questions. In verse 7, he says, "Gird up thy loins now like a man. I will demand of thee and declare unto me." Right, and when it says, "Gird up thy loins," what that was talking about is he was to take his robe, as they always wore robes in those days, pull it up a little bit, tuck it into his belt, tighten his belt, so that he was ready for work. They didn't want anything down where he would trip over it or drag on it and slow him down. He said, "I want you to get ready. You got work to do, Job. You're going to have to answer some tough questions that you're not able to answer." Then he goes on to him in verse number 8, "Wilt thou also disannul my judgment?" All right, so here God's just point blank asking him, "Job, are you gonna disannul my judgment?" The idea of disannul there means to throw something on the ground and break it in pieces by trampling on it. It's just similar to what they would do when they were threshing grain. They would take the grain and lay it out on the threshing floor, and they'd have their animals come and walk on it and pull drags and various things over top of it and roll on top of it to crush the grain to get it to break out of its shells so that it would open up. And he said, "Are you going to do that with me, God? As me as God? You know, I am God now, and are you going to do that to me regarding my judgment? I have made judgment to decide to allow you to suffer. And you don't like that, Job. You think I've done wrong. Are you telling me then that I was wrong and that I could not or should not have done that? Wilt thou condemn me that thou mayest be righteous?" Are you going to condemn me, Job, and say I was wrong so that you can be right? Is that what you're going to do, Job? And so God's just really coming down on Job very point blankly here and asking him some hard questions and throwing these things back at him. And just, "Job, do you think that you have the power to break my judgment? Do you have these kind of abilities? Are you going to be able to do that, Job?" You know, and so he's really coming straight forward on him. And then verse number 9, "Hast thou an arm like God?" All right. Remember, God stretched out his arms to create the heavens. God has powerful arms to be able to do whatever he wants to do. And he said, "Job, you got arms like mine? Are you able to do the things that I can do? Do you have the power that I have, Job, to be able to do that? Or canst thou thunder with thy voice like God?" Are you able to thunder with your voice and just make, and I'm not sure that he was speaking necessarily of the thunder in the sky. He may have been just speaking of the thunderous noise of God's voice. Remember when the children of Israel heard God speak to them on Mount Sinai and the thunder and the lightnings and the darkness that was there representing God's voice speaking to them. He said, you have the thunderous power of the voice like I do. And then he goes on to compare Job's power with his power. And he says here in the next verse here, deck thyself now with majesty. Now as he's getting into this section here, it appears that he is asking Job some pointed questions about whether Job feels like he is on a par with God. Roy Zook in his commentary put it this way. He said, pursuing this thought, God in piercing irony challenges Job to imagine himself in control of the universe, to play God, and to see if he could do a better job. And he asked Job, he said, Job, deck yourself now with majesty and excellence. Come on, let's see you make yourself majestic and like I am. Can you do that, Job? Deck yourself with that. And he goes on, array yourself with glory and beauty. Can you do that, Job? Can you array yourself with glory and beauty like me? You can't do that, Job. That's beyond your power. And he goes on in verse 11, cast abroad the rage of thy wrath, and behold, every one that is proud and abase him. Alright, so here he's talking about displaying his anger toward evil. He said, Job, you can't do that. You can't display your anger like I can toward evil and to deal with these things. And you cannot identify the proud and bring them down like I can do. You're not able to do that. Then he goes on in verse number 12. He says, look on everyone that is proud and bring him low and tread down the wicked in their place. Alright, so here he says, you know, I want you to inspect everyone to see who's proud and who's not. Job, you can't tell that. You know, that is true in our hearts as well. You know, we can see people and we can say, we can identify some people as kind of proud people because of the way they act and what they do, but really we can't see deep down in their heart. Only God can do that. And he's saying, Job, you can't do that. And you can't bring down those that are proud. You can't trample on the wicked like I can. And then in verse 13, he says, hide them in the dust together and bind their faces in secret. Alright, so here this is talking about hiding them and binding them, probably speaking of taking their lives. And he says, you can't do that either, Job. You have no control over their lives to hide them in the dust of the earth. And you know, that, remember God says, out of dust you came and out of the dust you're going to return. Perhaps speaking of taking their life like that. And he says, Job, you can't do that at all. Then God says to him, then, verse 14, then I will also confess unto thee that thine own right hand can save thee. He said, Job, if you can answer these questions, if you can deck yourself like God, you can do all these things that I can do, if you can pronounce evil, you know, the evil upon the wicked people, if you can do all those things that I can do, then God says, all right, then Job, fine. Then you can take care of yourself. You can, I'll pronounce that you really righteous like you think you are, but Job, you can't do that. You have no power over that. And, you know, after he confronts him like this, then he sets him down. He says, Job, now we're going to have a talk. I'm going to ask you some hard questions. You can't answer them. And as we sit down there beside Job, I want us to listen to what God says about his mighty power. And God knew that though Job saw that he did not understand nature like God did, and God showed him that he did not understand the animal world like God did, but Job was still not convinced that God had the right to do what he did to him. And now God's saying, all right, Job, you got to see my power now. I want you to see how strong I am. And he was playing on some of the things that Job knew. He was working on Job with things that he knew in his culture there. Now, if God was to say the same thing to us today, it wouldn't have the same effect because these creatures that he's about to describe no longer exist. They're extinct. But they were not extinct when Job was alive, and Job knew that. He says here in verse number 15, behold now, behemoth, which I made with thee. He eateth grass as an ox. All right, now this is a very important verse. He identifies this creature as behemoth, and he says that I made him with thee. You know this, idea that evolutionists have that the dinosaurs lived millions and millions of years ago, and then people, many, many thousands and millions of years after that, then the people came along. That's not what God said. God said, I made them with thee. And this creature that he's describing here, some commentators and even some Bible references, they call it a rhinoceros or a hippo or an elephant or something of that nature. It doesn't fit that description. You wait till you see it here. There's no way. He said it eats grass like an oxen. We would agree there. That's significant. They might have that in common. But as you work your way on, down in verse number 19, God says, and he is the chief of the ways of God. He that made him can make his sword to approach unto him. What is God saying here? God's saying, this is the greatest of all the creatures that I made. He is the chief of the ways of God. The greatest of, and you know, as I looked on Answers in Genesis website, and they described the dinosaurs. We all know the great big huge dinosaurs that were gigantic in size, with the long necks and the great big bodies and the long tail. And that's exactly what he's describing here. This huge dinosaur. And God says he's the chiefest of the ways of God. And yet God says here, I made him, I'm able to take the sword to him. In other words, God said, I created him, I can kill him. You can't do that, Job. You have no power over him. And he's about to show Job that, and Job knew that as a fact. Job knew that no fool would try to tangle with one of these gigantic dinosaurs. And as we dig into this, we see here that that only a fool would try to tackle one of these great huge creatures because of their size and the gigantic size of these things. Verse number 16, then he goes on and he reminds Job of the power of these creatures. Verse 16, lo now, his strength is in his loins and his force is in the navel of his belly. All right, so he says his loins, his upper legs are the great power of this creature. He's powerfully strong. And in his belly, the muscles of his stomach and of his torso are powerful muscles. And then he describes his tail, verse 17. He moved his tail like a cedar. Right? Those that say that it might have been a hippo. Well, hippo's got a little dinky tail, a little flip-flop. This has got a tail like a cedar. Right? What's a cedar? Well, the cedar trees, remember the cedars of Lebanon that Solomon used to build the temple with? They were tall, 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 straight trees. And to use that as an illustration of the tail, doesn't sound like a hippo, doesn't sound like an elephant. It sounds like something far greater than that. And he says that his sinews, of his stones are wrapped together, and his bones are strong as brass, and his bones are like bars of iron. Alright, so here he describes the bones of this. The first word bones there describes a tube of bone, like the tubular bones that we have, the big bones, and he says they're like bronze or brass. And then the other bone there is a more of a solid bone. He says they're like iron, bars of iron. He says they're powerful. Verse 19, again, he is the chiefest of all of his ways. Verse number 20, he goes on and describes here the habits of behemoth. He says, surely the mountains bringing forth food, and where all the beasts of the field play. All right, so he says he eats his food up in the grass on the mountainsides with all the other beasts that are playing up in the hills. And then he says in verse 21, he lieth under the shady trees and the covert of the reeds and the fens. So he says he also likes to go down into the valleys, into the marsh areas, in the swamps, and he hides in the reeds and gets shade under the trees there. In verse 22, and the shady trees cover him with their shadow, and the willows of the brook compass him about. So these trees down in the marsh are hanging over him, and he gets his shade down in there, and he cools off down in the swampy parts of the valleys. Behold, verse 23, he drinketh up the rivers and hasteth not, and he trusteth that he can draw up Jordan into his mouth. Now this verse is kind of a confusing verse. But it sounds like it's talking about the fact that even when the rivers rage against him, you know, if he's down in the waters and the rivers rage against him, you know, if you've ever been around a fast flowing river, they can be very dangerous if you try to cross them. I mean, they'll sweep you right off your feet. The rocks are usually slippery, You walk out on there and you're swept off your feet and you're washed down. He says, but this behemoth was so huge. He was so big, so powerful. He says, that didn't even frighten him in the least. And he swallowed up. He faced right into the water with his mouth and laugh at the power of the raging waters because of his great strength. Verse number 24, he taketh it with his eyes and his nose pierces through snares. The idea here is that, he had good eyesight. Anybody that tried to hunt him, tried to catch him, put out a trap or a snare for him, he said he just teared to shreds. It wouldn't even slow him down. Didn't even hesitate. No matter how strong the trap was, he would break it. He was very, very powerful. And so behemoth here, this huge dinosaur, this mammoth creature that God had created. God said, I created him. I've got the power over him. I can take his life. But Job, you can't touch him, and you know that, because he's so powerful that no man would go near him, and you know that, Job. And Job and all others of his kind were terrified of him. If they ever tried to attack him, that would be the last time. He was too powerful for them, and Job knew that. Now, as he knows this, God is illustrating his great power over the greatest, mightiest creatures on earth. And it reminds me of Jeremiah 32:17. Where Jeremiah says, Ah, Lord God, behold, thou hast made the heaven and earth by thy great power and stretched out arm, and there is nothing too hard for thee. Our God is powerful. Our God is mighty. And God doesn't stand up, and show himself, and so look at my muscles, and show us, flex his muscles like it. But Job, he needed to see that God was powerful, far more powerful than he was, and there was nothing on earth that God was afraid of, because God created it all. And so he's opening Job's eyes to these things. But he takes him on to another creature. Verse number 1 of chapter 41. Here he asks Job 20 questions about another creature he calls Leviathan. Canst thou draw out Leviathan with a hook? Or his tongue with the cord which thou lettest down? Alright, Leviathan was a sea creature. A gigantic sea creature. One of the biggest ones that God had ever created. And he was a powerful creature. And he says, can you catch him with a hook and line? Job, can you throw your line over there to catch him? Job knew that. No way. There's not a chance in that. And he says, can you let down a line to catch it? No. Canst thou put an hook into his nose? He says, Job, can you hook him in the nose and pull him in? Not a chance. Can you bore through his jaw with a thorn? Absolutely not. Verse 3, will he make many supplications unto thee? Will he speak soft words unto thee? Job, you can go have a talk with him. You commune with him, try to correspond with him. He said, no, can't do that. Absolutely not. He was terrified of this creature. And will he make a covenant with thee? Verse 4, wilt thou take him for a servant forever? Job, you're going to use this creature as a servant? You're going to bring him into your house and have him help you out? He said, Job, that's absolutely insane. You couldn't do that. No way. Verse 5, wilt thou play with him as with a bird? Or wilt thou bind him for thy maiden? He said, Job, you're going to be silly enough to try to tie up this little thing and this great creature and make him a pet? He said, Job, you can't do that. Shall thy companions make a banquet of him? And shall they part him among the merchants? He said, Job, you ever seen anybody catch one of these things and cut him up and sell him for meat? No. Nobody could ever come close to conquering one of these things. They were too strong for them. Verse 7, canst thou fill his skin with barbed irons, or his head with fish spears? No, that wouldn't work either. He was too powerful for that. Lay thine hand upon him, remember the battle, and do no more. The idea of this verse is here, you lay your hands on him, Job, very one thing, you'll never do it again. Because you'll never live through it. He was powerful. A very, very, very powerful creature that God is describing for him. And he's asking here 14 questions relating him in these first 8 verses. And then he asked him 6 more questions about this creature in verses 9 to 14. Verse 9, behold, the hope of him is in vain. Shall not one cast down even at the sight of him? Right? So he says, you're going to be, even at the sight of him, you'll be cast down. You'll just be terrified and fall down almost as dead because, Job, this thing is powerful. none is so fierce that dare stir him up. Who then is able to stand before me? Job, think about this. I created this great, huge, gigantic sea monster, and nobody's stupid enough to stir him up because they would never live to tell the story. And Job, I am far greater than he is. And who's able to stand before me? Then he goes on to verse 11. Who hath prevented me that I should repay him? The word prevented means to precede. Who's gone before me that I should have to repay him? Who do I owe anything to, Job? I don't owe anybody anything because I am the creator of all. I am the first and the last. I am the beginning. Nobody came before me. I don't owe anybody anything. He says, whosoever is under the whole heaven is mine. Whosoever is under the whole heaven is mine. It's all mine, Job. I own the cattle on the thousand hills. I own the thousand hills. I own the world. I own the universe. I own it all, Job. I am powerful over all this. Verse number 12. I will not conceal his parts, nor his power, nor his comely portions. He's Job, I'm telling you about this creature that you know nothing about, that you can't comprehend. He's far greater than you. You don't understand this guy. He's far greater than you could ever imagine. And I'm not going to keep silent about it. I'm going to let you know about it. Verse number 13. Who can discover his face, or the face of his garment? Right? So the idea, who can discover the face of his garment? The idea sounds like probably of skinning this creature, is what some commentators say. Well, you know, who's going to catch him and skin him like you would another reptile or an animal or a fish? Who can come to him with a double bridle? The idea is, who's going to put a bridle on this thing? You're going to bridle this big sea monster? Job, you're not going to do that. Who can open the doors of his face? What's the doors of his face? His mouth. And then notice here, his teeth are terrible around about. Who's going to go open his mouth, Job? You're going to go to him and say, come on, open up, let me have a look. No. He says, nobody would be fool enough to do that. His scales are his pride, shut up together as with a close seal. One is so near the other that no air can come between them. He had huge scales that were tightly bound on his body. They were like brass armor over him, so nothing could penetrate. And then he goes on to verse 18. By his kneesings a light doth shine, and his eyes are like the eyelids of the morning. And out of his mouth go burning lamps, and sparks of fire leap out. These are interesting verses. The word kneesings there literally refers to sneezing. Alright? So when he makes his sneezes or his belches or his blows out there, he's blowing out sparks and fire. He's like a fire-breathing dragon. You know, there's all kinds of legends of fire-breathing dragons. Most people today like to see a fire-breathing dragon. But apparently there was. There are beetles. There's a fire-breathing beetle that can shoot flames that will kill other creatures that are after him. We know that to be fact. So this creature, evidently there was this huge dragon of the sea. There was a fire-breathing dragon. Out of his nostrils goes forth smoke, and out of his a seething pot or a cauldron. So he's in the water, and when he churns, it's like, you know, when you take a pot and you have a big spoon in it and you churn it, and the water just churns and spurts. He says, that's what it's like when this guy's in the water. Everything churns, and he is breathing. His breath kindles coals, and of a flame goes out of his mouth. So again, here all of these are talking about the fire-breathing dragon that God had created there. Great, powerful, powerful monster of the sea. And then verse 22 to 24, he talks here about his extreme strength. His neck remained a strength. In his neck remained a strength. And the sorrow is turned into joy before him. The flakes of his flesh are joined together, and they are firm in themselves. They cannot be moved. His heart is firm as a stone. Yea, his heart is a piece of the nether millstone. So he says his heart like a stone, a rock stone that we would use for grinding grain. He said, this fellow is strong. He is powerful. He is uncomparable to others. Then he goes on in verses 25 to 28, talking about how There's no weapons that can touch him. Verse 25, he raises up himself, and the mighty are afraid. By reason of the breakings of, they purify themselves. The sword of him that layeth at him cannot hold, and the spear and the dart and the habergeon. He esteemeth iron as straw and brass as rotten wood. The arrow cannot make him flee. The sling stones are churned with him into stubble. Darts are counted as stubble. He laugheth at the shaking of the spear. So when this huge monster come up out of the sea and they tried shooting at him, no matter what they shot at him, it was like just shooting at him with pebbles. He didn't pay any attention. He's powerful. Very mighty powerful. And then he goes on in verse 30 and he talks about the tracks that this creature makes. Sharp stones are under him. He spread a sharp pointed things upon the mire. Right, so when he would crawl on the mire, he would leave marks of deep impressions where there were sharp impressions into the ground. He maketh the deep to boil like a pot, and he maketh the sea a pot of ointment. Right, so he says that when he's in the sea and he churns and he flips his tail or his fins, the sea would just churn like a pot. And he maketh the path to shine after him. One would think the deep were to be hoary. The word hoary there means white-haired. And so when he would take a dive into the sea, and the path that would follow behind him would just turn white, you know, like a speedboat that was leaving a path of foam behind him. He said it was his great power and his might. Verse 33, upon earth there is not his like, who is made without fear. He beholdeth all things, all high things. He is king over all the children of pride. He said this is the strongest of all of the mighty creatures that God made. Behemoth was one of the greatest and biggest, probably the largest of all of the land creatures. Leviathan was the largest of all of the sea creatures. Now just to give you an idea of the size of this thing. I found an answer to Genesis. They found a skull not too long ago. The skull was 2.8 meters long. The skull. 2.8 meters long. And, you know, just to give you kids an idea, that's as high, I can just barely reach 2.8 meters. His head was that long. 2.8 meters. And they said that when they found this skull, this was the skull of a plesiosaur, an aquatic reptile, one of the dinosaurs, that had four fins and a powerful neck and many sharp teeth. And its body, if this creature that they found, if the head that they found was in proportion with the body that they normally would have, they said that that creature that had that head would have been 16 meters long. 16 meters long, 54 feet. That is gigantic. Gigantic. And the power of it, they said that it would have weighed between 7 and 13 tons. It was a huge, huge creature. One of the great, huge sea dinosaurs. And God said, Job, you know very well you have no power over that creature at all, and nobody in their right mind would go near him. They would never live to tell the story. And none of your weapons will hurt him. None of your traps will catch him. Nothing you can do to stop him. You're never going to barbecue this fella. He is more powerful than you'll ever be able to be. And yet, Job, I made that creature. And I'm in control of him. And I can kill him if I choose to. Because I'm more powerful than he is. And Job, you can't touch him. And so he uses these two great creatures. Great, huge behemoth. And Job, no doubt, knew exactly what God was talking about. Job had probably seen behemoths. He had very likely, from what God's describing here, God doesn't say, Job, I know you've never seen one of these things before, but let me tell you about it. No, it was like Job knew exactly what God was talking about. He knew what the behemoth was, and he knew what the Leviathan was, and he knew that they were mighty, powerful, powerful creatures that nobody could tangle with and live. And yet God said, Job, I made them. They're mine. And I can control them. And I can take their life. And you have no power over them at all. And next week we're going to close up the book and we're going to see that Job comes to the place where he humbles himself before God and says, God, you're right. I have no power like yours. I got no power like yours. But you know, what can we learn from all this? How can this be a help and encouragement to us? Well, folks, listen. God created those great creatures that are so much more powerful than anything man could possibly comprehend. God created them. And God is stronger than all of His creatures that He ever created. God is absolutely sovereign in the universe. Job had no right to accuse God or question God, and neither do we. God said, Job, if I choose to make you sick, what right do you have to question my authority? And even though that's hard, when we think about that and we think, well, why would God want to make me sick? That's God's business, not mine. And if God chooses to give us troubles or heartaches or problems, even if we haven't done anything to deserve it, God said, I'm in control. I can do as I please. And I'm more powerful than anything you've ever seen before. I'm much wiser than anything you can comprehend. I know all the things that you can. I control all the animals. I control all nature. I control the stars. I control the weather. I even control these gigantic monsters. You can't control anything. And so God's saying to us, when troubles and problems and heartaches come our way, we need to be thankful that we have a loving God who cares for all of His creatures, including us. And we need to trust Him with our lives to care for us. God can take care of us. God can take care of us. And folks, I need to remember that on the difficult days when things seem to be going wrong, I need to remember God can and will take care of me because He is in control. He is in control, and I can trust Him. And every one of us need to do the same. We need to say, God, I trust You. I trust You. Because I know You're far greater than I'll ever be.